Krishna. So good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for coming. So this morning we're reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Today we're reading from the Madhya Lila, chapter number 10, entitled The Lord's Return to Jagannath Puri. And we're reading from text number 120, so I don't think there's a purport till 136. So, God, it's complicated. I'll do it in a minute. We'll just begin here and then see where we go. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has been traveling around South India, and now he's returned to Jagannath Puri. His servant Kala Krishnadas had become deviated on the journey, so when Mahaprabhu arrived back in Puri, he excommunicated Kala Krishnadas. It was a big blunder. Pumsha Striya Mithuni Bhava Meitam. The attraction between man and woman is the basic principle of material existence. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to show that when we become compromised in that aspect of life, then definitely we're bound for trouble and entanglement. And therefore Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very, very strict with Kala Krishnadas. But the devotees were very, very kind and they told, "No, Mahaprabhu, you somehow, everyone in this age is weak. Everyone in this age may make a mistake. You cannot just write people off. Give him another chance." So they sent him to Navadvip that, "Okay, then you do a service." There's always a service to do in the Hare Krishna movement, even if you make a big blunder. So they sent him on a service to Navadvip and he informed all the devotees that Mahaprabhu has arrived back in Puri. You have to understand what kind of amazing news that was. You see, in this time there is no communication technologies. So basically the residents of Navadvip know nothing. Mahaprabhu has just disappeared into the horizon, into South India. No one knows where exactly he's going, when exactly he's going to come back, what his route is. Nobody knows. And for 2 years they don't know anything. Where is Mahaprabhu? And then out of the blue, Kala Krishnadas comes with the message, "Mahaprabhu is back in Puri." And as soon as they hear that Mahaprabhu is back in Puri, they just drop everything and they just start moving that way. That in itself is pretty amazing. You know, you think like, these people have jobs, they have families, they have things to do in life. But as soon as they hear the news, Mahaprabhu has come, they just drop everything and they just run. That's very nice, you know. Of course, they understood. They're going to a special place, Jagannath Puri. They're going to meet a special person, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They're going at a special time of year because Rath Yatra is about to begin. And they're going in a very, very special mood because it's after a long separation. So no wonder they are running. But I find it always revealing that they're able to just adjust in their life and move like that whenever they need to. In India, it's still a little bit like that. Like you can turn up in a place and they just, as soon as you arrive, they're like, "Okay, we'll have a program tomorrow." And you're like, "But don't people need notice, like to organize things?" They're like, no, adjust. And then within one day they have like 6 programs lined up and everything. And every program is attended by hundreds of people. And you think like, that's amazing. People can just adjust their life. When there is an opportunity to come together, to hear and chant, why waste the opportunity? Just run, just go. This is what counts. Jagadananda Pandit says in Prema Vivarta, "Sadhu Sange Krishna Naam E Matra Chai Samsar Vinite Ar Kona Vastu Nai." He says, when you get the opportunity to associate with devotees and hear and chant together, run, go. Samsar Vinite Ar Because if you want to get out of the mess of this world, kona vastu nai, there's nothing else that's going to do it. When you have the opportunity to associate, then just go. So when an opportunity arises, they just ran, they went. We have an opportunity in May. Here comes the advertisement break. 24th to 27th of May, we have an opportunity for you to associate with some incredible sadhus, His Holiness Sachinandan Maharaj, Her Grace Mother Vishakha, His Grace Gauranga Prabhu, many other devotees, Kirtaniers, Radhika Prabhu and others are coming. Run! Already we have about 200 devotees signed up. We have space to accommodate another 200. So please, please come, everyone online. Log on to the KrishnaTemple.com website. Now you can press skip ad and we'll move on to the YouTube video. So it's very, very beautiful. In our life now, we are so imprisoned. We don't realize how imprisoned we are to take advantage of some devotional opportunity. There are so many obstacles. You can't move because of a visa. You can't move because of a job commitment. You can't move because of financial pressures. You can't move because of relationships around you that don't allow. So imprisoned in this world, somehow to create a life where we can just move, like the residents are moving, to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that would be wonderful. And therefore now we'll hear about how all the devotees are just coming to see Mahaprabhu. Sadhu Sange, Krishna Naam, E Matra Chai, this is the real benefit of life. So we'll read from text number 120, and then I'll just read the English, and then 136 we'll read together. We have these beautiful screens where you can follow along. Text number 120. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one of the first people to come is Swarup Damodar. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu raised Swarup Damodar to his feet and embraced him. They both became ecstatic in love and fell unconscious. This is amazing. The love between the Lord and his devotees, the love between the Vaishnavas is so powerful. They meet, they embrace, they become so ecstatic that they fall unconscious. Nowadays I travel in a lot of airports, so I witness a lot of ecstatic meetings at the arrivals lounges. You know, it's very interesting to see different cultures around the world. You know, you're in Africa, Europe, different places, how they greet each other. Very nice, lot of affection. So far I didn't see anyone fall unconscious in the arrivals lounge. This is so powerful. The devotees have such love for each other. We have to learn how to love the devotees. It's an emotional connection. Sometimes in our communities we can be together in a room, but it's so awkward, it's so uptight. We're kind of in a room together, we have no idea what to say to each other. It's all a bit, you know, blocked by impersonalism, blocked by hard-heartedness, blocked by the inability to actually open ourselves and be vulnerable in a relationship. So here the emotions just go to another level. They fall unconscious. In the world today they have the concept of lovesick. When you really love someone and you're not in contact with them, you become lovesick. In Vaishnava culture, lovesickness goes so far that people leave their body when they're in separation from another devotee. That's amazing. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's first wife, Lakshmi Priya, she left in separation. She couldn't remain in her body. So it's really a movement of loving relationships. And this is so much what we're reading here. Swarup Damodar comes to see Mahaprabhu. Swarup Damodar is said to be the alter ego of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One commentator says like this. An alter ego means another person in your life who is another person, clearly, but is almost of one mind with you. Almost is exactly the same mindset. There's no difference. They know your mind, you know their mind, just by looking at them, just by glancing, they can understand what you're thinking, and vice versa. So Svarupa Damodara is said to be the alter ego of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, Svarupa Damodara is Lalita Sakhi, and Lalita Sakhi and Srimati Radharani are also inseparable. So Svarupa Damodara comes and Mahaprabhu embraces him, feeling so much happiness. Text number 121. After they had regained their patience, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to speak. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "I saw in a dream that you were coming, and so this is very auspicious. I've been like a blind man, but your coming here restores my vision." Svarup said, "My Lord, my dear Lord, please excuse my offense. I gave up your company to go elsewhere, and that was my great mistake." Svarupa Damodara had grown up with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Navadvip. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taken sannyas, then it was too difficult for Svarupa Damodara. So it said that Svarupa Damodara at that time, he went to Varanasi. And in Varanasi, he was known as Purushottam Acharya. And in Varanasi, later on, he took sannyas himself. And then from Varanasi, he came to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. So he said, "I made a mistake. I should have just followed you, but I went via there. My dear Lord, I do not possess even a trace of love for your lotus feet. If I did, how could I have gone to another country? I am therefore a most sinful man." It's interesting, he refers to Varanasi as a different country. I haven't heard any explanation of this, but perhaps because Varanasi is so different, full of impersonalism, full of Mayavad, almost a different world, isn't it? Sometimes when you go into a company or community and it's so different to your culture, you say, this is like a different world. So similarly, he was seeing that these other places that he had gone to were like a different world, another country. Text 125. "I gave up your company, but you did not give me up. By your rope of mercy, you have bound me by the neck and brought me back again to your lotus feet." Svarupa Damodara then worshipped the lotus feet of Nityananda Prabhu. And Nityananda Prabhu in turn embraced him in the ecstasy of love. After worshipping Nityananda Prabhu, Svarupa Damodara met Jagadananda, Mukunda, Shankara, Sarvabhauma, as was befitting. Svarupa Damodara also offered his worshipful prayers at the lotus feet of Paramananda Puri, who in turn embraced him in ecstatic love. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then gave Svarupa Damodara residence in a solitary place and ordered a servant to serve him with a supply of water and other necessities. The next day, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sat with all the devotees headed by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and they discussed the pastimes of Krishna. At that time, Govinda appeared on the scene, offered his respectful obeisances, and spoke submissively. So here all the different devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are arriving. Each one of them bring a different flavor to the Sangha. It's said that Govinda and Kashishvara Pandit, they are bringing the bhav of dasya, servitude. Because in Krishna Leela, they are Bringara and Bhangura, Krishna's servants. Then it's said that Ramananda Rai is arriving in Jagannath Puri. He is bringing the flavor of Sakya, because Ramananda Rai is Arjun in Krishna Leela. Then it said here, Paramananda Puri is also arriving in Jagannath Puri, and he is bringing the bhav of Vatsalya, because Paramananda Puri is Uddhav, And Uddhav acted as Krishna's instructor in many situations. And then Swarup Damodara has arrived. And Swarup Damodara, as we know, is Lalita Sakhi. And so what he's bringing to the flavor is helping Mahaprabhu to experience Madhurya Bhav. So Mahaprabhu came to experience Chari Bhav, four bhavs. But to experience bhav, to experience rasa, you cannot do it by yourself. You always need the help of other devotees. Mahaprabhu could have come to Jagannath Puri, locked himself in the Gambira, and just read by himself. But it wouldn't have been the same. We used to go on Brahmachari trips, and it would be the one time in the year where you have like a complete break, and so we would go like on a marathon of reading. So many of the Brahmacharis, they would go into a cave for like 14 hours of the day and just like religiously read, like as if they were doing their reading for the rest of the year, like get it all in 1 week. And it was nice, and still sometimes we feel like doing that. But actually, if you really want to experience rasa, you can never do it by yourself. There must be Vaishnavas. There must be Sajatiya Sangha in which you exchange what is deep within your heart, what are your feelings for Krishna. And when you nourish each other with your feelings for Krishna, then actually you can really experience what this bhakti rasa is. So Mahaprabhu himself doesn't do it alone. He brings all these devotees and each of them bring a different flavor. So we're so fortunate. Sometimes I feel like even in our ISKCON movement, we have so many flavors. We have so many Vaishnavas who bring so many different mellows to the table. And very, very individual. Our movement is a very individual movement. I think it's a good thing. Even all the brahmacharis don't wear the same shade of saffron. I personally think mine is the best. But we all have our own individuality, our own taste, our own realization, and we bring it. I love to hear so many different Vaishnavas in our movement. You know, one day I love to hear His Holiness Gaur Govinda Maharaj, who speaks with such conviction, who speaks with such a love for the Bhagavatam, who speaks and brings out the essence of our false ego and how we have to become humble and overcome our anarthas. Very beautiful. And then you can listen to someone like His Holiness Hridayananda Maharaj, who, as Prabhupada said, had transcendental intelligence and who knows how to reach the minds of the people, how to present Krishna consciousness in a scientific, logical, rational way that can really turn intelligent people towards Krishna. Very beautiful. And then you can hear, you know, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, such a storyteller, how he takes us into the pastimes of Mahaprabhu. And then His Holiness Sachinandan Maharaj, oh, very sweet. Just a smile is enough. So everyone, so many flavors, so many tastes, very, very nice. We need this. It's a movement of variety. It's a movement of diversity. But it's a movement of unity in diversity. And that is the hard part. So Govinda arrives, one of the most intimate associates of Mahaprabhu. 132. I am a servant of Ishwarapuri. My name is Govinda. And following the orders of my spiritual master, I have come here. Just before his departure from this mortal world to attain the highest perfection, Ishwarapuri told me that I should go to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and render service unto him. Kashishvara will also come here after visiting all the holy places. However, following the orders of my spiritual master, I have hastily come to be present at your lotus feet. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, my spiritual master Ishwarapuri always favors me with paternal affection. Therefore, out of His causeless mercy, He has sent you here. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a little bit embarrassed because Govinda and Kashishvara Pandit, they are both disciples of Ishwarapuri. And Ishwarapuri is Mahaprabhu's own spiritual master. So that makes all three of them God brothers. Yet both of them are coming here to Jagannath Puri and they're saying, Mahaprabhu, we've come to serve you. And Mahaprabhu's thinking, we are God brothers. We are on an equal platform. How you came to serve me? I can't accept that service. And later on, Govinda will defeat the Lord and say, the supreme, the order of the spiritual master supersedes everything. So whatever it may be, you have to accept. He ordered us to serve you. So now we're reading from text number 136. So this one has a purport, so we'll read this together. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation, after hearing this, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya asked Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why did Ishwarapuri keep a servant who comes from a Sudra family? So Ishwarapuri and Kashishvara Pandit were the servants of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of Ishwarapuri and later on Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So here Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is wondering why Ishwarapuri overlooked the fact that Govinda was from a Sudra family. Govinda and Kashishvara Pandit, when they came to meet Mahaprabhu, they did different things. Govinda was the personal servant. He said that Kashishvara Pandit, his service was to be a bodyguard of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when Mahaprabhu would go, then Mahaprabhu would have three circles around him. The first circle was Nityananda Prabhu and his associates. The second circle was Kashishvara Pandit, Mukunda and others. And the third circle was Prataparudra and the bodyguards. So it was a nice service. You get to push people away, out of the way. So Kashishvara Pandit and Govinda, they came to serve the Lord. But the question is being asked here by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that why did Ishwarapuri overlook that the fact that they're from a Sudra family? Generally, those from a Sudra family are not accepted as servants like that. Purport. Both Kashishvara and Govinda were personal servants of Ishwarapuri. After Ishwarapuri's demise, Kashishvara went to visit all the holy places of India. Following the orders of his supreme, his spiritual master, Govinda immediately went to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for shelter. Govinda came from a Sudra family, but because he was initiated by Ishwarapuri, he was certainly a Brahmana. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya here asked Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why Ishwarapuri accepted a disciple from a Sudra family? According to Smriti Shastra, which gives directions for the management of the Varanashram institution, a Brahmana cannot accept a disciple from the lower castes. In other words, a Kshatriya, Vaishya or Sudra cannot be accepted as a servant. If a spiritual master accepts such a person, he is contaminated. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya therefore asked why Ishwarapuri accepted a servant or disciple born of a Sudra family. In answer to this question, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied that his spiritual master Ishwarapuri was so empowered that he was as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As such, Ishwarapuri was the spiritual master of the whole world. He was not a servant of any mundane rule or regulation. An empowered spiritual master like Ishwarapuri can bestow his mercy upon anyone, irrespective of caste or creed. The conclusion is that an empowered spiritual master is authorized by Krishna and his own guru and should therefore be considered as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the verdict of Vishwanath Chakravarti, Shaksha Dharitvena. An authorized spiritual master is as good as Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As Hari is free to act as he likes, the empowered spiritual master is also free. As Hari is not subject to mundane rules and regulations, the spiritual master empowered by him is also not subject. According to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Leela 7.11, Krishna Shakti Vinana He Tara Pravartan. An authorized spiritual master empowered by Krishna can spread the glories of the holy name of the Lord, for he has the power of attorney from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the mundane world, anyone possessing his master's power of attorney can act on behalf of his master. Similarly, a spiritual master empowered by Krishna through his own bona fide spiritual master should be considered as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. That is the meaning of Shakshad Dharitvena. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore describes the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the bona fide spiritual master as follows. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ishvara Puri was empowered. He had no need to follow mundane rules of Varnashram Dharma. Ishvara Puri not only was empowered to awaken, but he was also empowered to see what was latent within someone. And therefore the Supreme Lord and his empowered representatives always put bhakti over dharma. There may be some dharmic rules and regulations, some codes of behavior, some etiquettes or some kind of social hierarchy, which is necessary because we have to live in a society. Therefore, there has to be some stratification. There has to be some level of rules which govern how we interact and how we integrate with each other. But the Supreme Lord and the empowered devotees know how to look beyond that. And therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he doesn't shatter Varnashram Dharma. Oftentimes, he honors it. But then what Mahaprabhu and his representatives will do is many, many times they'll go beyond Varnashram Dharma. And they'll say, beyond this, bhakti reigns always supreme. We don't want to break Varnashram Dharma, because Varnashram Dharma, as Prabhupada says, is good for progressive civilization. It helps us to understand how to interact. Yet we don't want to be bound by Varnashram Dharma. We need to see that there's something beyond that, some deeper aspect that we have to grasp onto, because Vaishnava ultimately has to be Saragrahi, which means able to grasp the essence. And so here Ishvara Puri has no qualms. He has no issue in accepting Govinda as his servant, even though the whole world may criticize him, even though the whole world may say, you've become contaminated, you've lost your caste because you've accepted a sudra. Ishvara Puri doesn't care, because he knows that what really counts is how much bhakti someone has. We should never get caught on the externals such that we fail to see the heart of someone. So we find this throughout the Bhagavatam, we find this throughout Chaitanya Leela, that the normal social hierarchies of what we consider higher and lower will always be reversed by the Bhagavatam and even in Mahaprabhu's pastimes. And there are many examples. For example, according to normal social hierarchy, men are the leaders and ladies follow. That is the social hierarchy of Varnashram institution. Yet then what we'll find in the Bhagavatam is pastimes where the ladies are seen to be more elevated than their male counterparts. And therefore the wives of the yagyic brahmanas are glorified above their husbands. The wives of the Kaliya serpent are glorified above Kaliya. Because yes, according to social hierarchy, men are higher than women. But in the ultimate sense, whoever has bhakti, they are considered the leader. And this also happens in Gaura Leela as well. For example, if you go to Vrindavan today, then on the banks of Radhakund, next to the samadhi of Raghunath Das Goswami, is Janava Mata's Baitak, her sitting place. And it's said that Janava Mata, who was such a self-effulgent Vaishnava teacher of her time, accepted by everyone. She came into Vrindavan just for a few days. And it said that she sat down on the banks of Radha Kund. That place is there today. And in those few days that she was there, she met all the Goswamis. She met Jiva Goswami. She met Gopal Bhatta Goswami. She met Raghunath Das Goswami. She met all these illustrious Vaishnavas. And all of these Goswamis, considered to be the leaders of Mahaprabhu's movement, they were in ecstasy seeing her. It's described in Bhakti Ratnakar that when she came into Radha Kund and Raghunath Das Goswami saw Janava Mata, his eyes were just brimming up with so many tears of ecstasy that he couldn't see anything. And it's explained that Janava Mata was the one who inspired Raghunath Das Goswami that don't kill yourself. He was in so much separation from Mahaprabhu. But Janava Mata was one of those who convinced him, don't kill yourself because you know everything about Mahaprabhu. Just some yards down from where Raghunath Das Goswami was staying was Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's bhajan kutir. And he said, and Janava Mata told him, you have to tell him everything so he can write Chaitanya Charitamrita. So such an illustrious Vaishnavi. Without a need for any title, was accepted by all the Vaishnavas of that time beyond Varnashram considerations that she has an incredible level of spiritual consciousness. Therefore, even sometimes Srila Prabhupada used to quote this story of Mirabai, who supposedly had come to Vrindavan and had requested to meet Jiva Goswami. And according to the legend, Jiva Goswami refused to see Mirabai when she sent a request because he said, I'm a sannyasi, I'm a renunciate, I don't see women. And then later on, Mirabai sent a message back saying, women, females, everyone in Vrindavan is female. Only Krishna is the enjoyer. Are you trying to take Krishna's position? And then, according to the legend, Jiva Goswami then gave in and saw Mirabai and appreciated her. But when Prabhupada heard this story, he said, this story doesn't make sense. He said, because Jiva Goswami had no issue with seeing ladies. He met Janava Mata. Had no issue. Because the Goswamis, although the greatest renunciates, and although so strict in their Varanashram duty as a renunciate, were also able to see bhakti. When Mahaprabhu was in Jagannath Puri temple and the Orissan lady just came in out of ecstasy and jumped on his shoulder just so that she could have a darshan of Jagannath, then Govinda just, aparad, aparad. And Mahaprabhu just looked at Govinda and he told him, basically, shut up. He said, she is my guru. Just see how much enthusiasm she has. She should step on my shoulder. I need that mercy. And this was Mahaprabhu, who was so strict. So you see how the Vaishnavas are honoring Varanashram Dharma, but then in many, many times saying there's something beyond this. We have to look beyond. Ashram. Yes, the sannyasis, renunciates, must be given respect, he says. But then the Bhagavatam shows us Durvasa Muni and Ambarish, Save Mana Krishna Padada Vindayo, Vacham Shive Kunda Gunanu Varnane. He's completely absorbed. And his brilliance is coming out over the renunciate, Durvasa Muni, so austere, so rigid, so disciplined, so established in his tyag, has to bow down. Because Ambarish has bhakti. And then it happens the same thing in Gaura Leela. Mahaprabhu comes to the banks of the Godavari and he sits down with Ramananda Rai, a Grihastha. And he begins to ask Ramanandan Rai all the questions. What is the ultimate goal of life? And he listens from Ramananda Rai, reversing. No, Ramananda Rai has great bhakti. We must look beyond. So in all these stratifications, if you look at social position, the Bhagavatam reverses it. Rahugana is on the palanquin, a king, surrounded by opulence, position, power, so much influence. But then there is Jadabharat, who's just his palanquin carrier. But then later on, he hears some words from Jadabharat's mouth and understands, oh my God, he's so learned. Rahugana comes off the palanquin and he bows and listens to Jadabharat. It doesn't matter on social position, I have to hear from you. Please give me teachings on the mind. And Jadabharat then teaches, a palanquin carrier teaches him. And same thing happens in the Antilila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You have the story of Kalidas and Jadu Thakur. Kalidas is from an established family. Jadu Thakur is a sweeper. So Kalidas goes to his house. It's such a beautiful, in the 16th chapter of the Antilila, you can read it. It's such a beautiful interaction. And Kalidas just says to Jadu Thakur, I want to eat. I want to cook for me. And Jadu Thakur says, no, I'll send the ingredients to a brahmana who can then cook for you. I am very low. Kalidas says, I don't just want you to cook for me. I want you to cook. I want you to eat it. And then I want to taste the remnants from your own mouth. And Jadu Thakur just can't accept that. And then later on, Kalidas gives him mangoes. And then he has those mangoes, throws it out, and Kalidas goes on. Take the skins of that which Jadu Thakur is a sweeper, but such a great Vaishnav. Because bhakti is what counts. So always we're finding bhakti has to come to the front. And here, Varna, it doesn't matter, someone may be a sudra, but if they have bhakti. Everyone in Naimisharanya, all the Paka Brahmanas, all the great sages, when Suta Goswami arrives on the scene, no one needs to give him a title. They just all sit round him and sit at his feet and want to listen, even though he's of lower birth, lower varna, because he has bhakti. So the Chaitanya Charitamrita will always help us to honor Varnashram, but at the same time see, never judge someone by the externals. What really counts is how much love they have in their heart. And in today's day and age, maybe we don't judge people so much on Varna or Ashram, but maybe we judge people on other external things, their popularity. If someone has more popularity, somehow in our minds we calculate that this person must be more advanced. No, not necessarily. We measure on ability. If someone has ability to do something, then they must be more advanced. No. We measure on productivity. If someone is able to produce incredible results and do amazing things, then they must be more advanced. Not necessarily. And so this constant tendency of the conditioned soul to always measure and judge and calculate someone based on their externals, spiritual culture is always helping us to go beyond that. So it's very, very beautiful here. The essence of this purport is that the great teachers, the Supreme Lord is teaching us, never judge on the externals. Look beyond. Look at what bhakti someone has. Because the beginning of all problems is when we simply judge people on the externals. I grew up in Wembley, and it was many, many different races and, you know, like religions, and there was some level of racial tension. So I remember one day in class in school, the teacher read out to us Martin Luther King's speech, "I Have a Dream." And we had to memorize parts of that speech. You know, it was a very powerful speech. I don't know if you remember that. In Washington, Martin Luther King said, you know, he gave this iconic speech, "I Have a Dream." "I have a dream that one day the blacks and the whites, the Jews and the Gentiles, the Protestants and the Catholics will hold hands together and say, 'Free at last, free at last.' I have a dream that one day my four children will be judged by, not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream that one day, in the sweltering oppression of Mississippi, that this sweltering heat of oppression may be transformed to an oasis of freedom." And then he says at the end of his speech, "I have a dream, and my dream is the same as the American dream. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." It was a very powerful speech. It's amazing what stays with you after many years. What you learn as a kid is amazing. It goes deep. But this U.S. Constitution, the very first statement in the U.S. Constitution is that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. And so what he was talking about is something that perpetuates in the world, that we're so apt to judge people and to categorize people and to project so many opinions based on externals. And so the Chaitanya Charitamrita is always helping us to go beyond that. So when Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya asked Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how was it that Ishwarapuri, how can this happen? He accepted a Sudra servant. Mahaprabhu says, he looked beyond all of this. And that must be the vision of a Vaishnava. Hare Krishna. Okay, I think I'll stop here and see whether anyone may have any comments or anything you may want to ask. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you. Thank you for the class, Maharaj. When Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya first met with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was a Mayavadi. And he got transformed to a Lord, I mean, become pure devotee. But when you see that he's asking this question, because when he was transformed, he was even ready to eat Mahaprasad without washing his mouth. So when he has developed to that level of devotion, how could he ask this kind of question to Mahaprabhu?
Yeah. In one sense, as I mentioned, Mahaprabhu was not shattering Varnashram. So say, for example, Sanatan Goswami and Haridas Thakur, for example, was not allowed to go in the Jagannath temple, right? Because he had come from a Muslim family. So now Mahaprabhu, he did not go to the Jagannath Puri Pandas and make a big thing of it. He didn't fight that, even though it was a misjudgment. Right, Mahaprabhu just accepted this is part of the social integration, this is just part of the society we live in. Some aspects have to just be tolerated and accepted and gone with. So it seems also here that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is also seeing, although he knows maybe he's just wondering, is there some aspects of Varnashram that have to be honored and some aspects that shouldn't be honored? Because you're totally right, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya knows more than this. Like, he knows that, you know, but maybe he's just wondering why in this case Varnashram was transcended. Maybe he's trying to understand, this is just my speculation, why in other situations Mahaprabhu went beyond Varnashram, and why in certain situations Mahaprabhu honored Varnashram. Perhaps he's just trying to make that. That could be one reason that comes to my mind. That's all I can think of, because as you said, you know, when he became transformed, he went beyond all these rules and regulations to the extent that, you know, you talked about the pastime with Mahaprasad, he was ready to take it immediately, not following so-called rules of how you should do it. So it seems to me that he's just trying to better understand what is Mahaprabhu and Ishwarapuri's position on Varnashram, and why in sometimes they seem to honor it and sometimes they seem to transcend it. That's what comes. Do you have any reflection on that?
There.
Yeah.
And then Sukadeva Goswami also touching some points with related to yoga and other things, but at the same time he was giving the highest principle of Krishna consciousness. Whereas I was just maybe thinking, maybe it is for us to know, just to
He was almost speaking just to ask, to clarify the point for us. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada seems to intimate that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was genuinely inquisitive. We'll go one like this. Maybe Mataji, and then we can go one.
Krishna Maharaj, do we have to go deeper into our relationship with Krishna and with the devotees to be able to develop bhakti?
Do we need to go deeper in our relationship with Krishna and the devotees to develop bhakti? Bhakti is relationship. There's no bhakti without relationship. Bhakti means love. And love means an object and a subject, two people, and an exchange between them. So there is no bhakti without relationships. That's why Srila Prabhupada says Mayavad is spiritual suicide. Because when you annihilate all variegatedness, then there's no opportunity for exchange. And if there's no opportunity for exchange, there's no love. So yes, we must go deeper. We must become very, very personal. To become personal in this day and age is the most difficult thing, because it is such an impersonal age. And that's why constantly when we read Chaitanya Charitamrita, we're seeing how personal they are with each other. It's all relationship. Is that okay?
Harishu Maharaj, you spoke about the example of Durvasa Muni actually going and begging forgiveness from Ambarish Maharaj. And in that pastime, we also know that Durvasa Muni had actually approached even the Supreme Lord. And the Supreme Lord even said that, "I can't help, you have offended my devotee." So on one side, the Supreme Personality is saying, Chaturya Varne Maya System. At the same time, then, as you said, like he's saying, because you have offended, so only my devotee can actually forgive you. So how does this correlate? Can you just share some thoughts on this one?
So your point is that on one hand, Krishna is saying he creates Varnashram and he creates all these roles, but on another, and he's the controller of the system. But on the other hand, he's saying, I'm not in control here, you need to. Krishna creates a system of social integration, and Krishna controls that system, and he gives different individuals different powers in that system. Yet when it comes to bhakti, that goes beyond the material system. Because bhakti is an affair of the heart. Bhakti is an affair of exchange. And therefore, even in that point, Krishna becomes powerless because Krishna can't control the emotions of anyone. And therefore, even Krishna doesn't have the power to forgive someone. Only the devotee, because Krishna can't control the emotions of that devotee. It has to come from that devotee's own volition. And because that devotee has become so powerful, so dear to Krishna, unless they forgive, there's no opportunity for that person. So yes, while Krishna creates a Varnashram system and gives everyone power, one can never have power over someone else's emotions. And that emotions, that has to come from the individual. Does that make sense?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. How would you decide someone's bhakti is better than someone else's bhakti? Right? Because you spoke a lot about we go by bhakti. So how would you make that distinction? How would you bring the two devotees together? They may be both Prabhupada disciples. They may be both gurus. They may be
I think what we can devotees. Try to do is, rather than trying to understand how someone's bhakti is better than someone else's bhakti, what may be a better way to do it is say, how is this person's bhakti better than my bhakti? In other words, what devotional spark, what devotional wealth, what beauty in this person's love for Krishna can I see that I can learn from, that I can benefit from? I think if we try to judge someone's bhakti, we'll always go into problems. And therefore we can only try to judge our own bhakti and learn from everyone else's bhakti. Of course, we know the standard of what is pure devotional service. Anya bhilashita shunyam jnana karma dinavritam. But how can you understand that? Vaishnavera kriya mudra vigyayana bhujoy. If you try to understand the mind activities and words of a Vaishnava, you may become completely baffled. So therefore, perhaps the safer option, and actually if you look at Vaishnava community, we're always looking for an opportunity to respect others. So you know, even though we say it goes beyond age, it goes beyond ashram, still when someone's older than us, we use the opportunity to respect. Still, when someone is in a different ashram, we use the opportunity to respect. Still, when someone is in a position of great responsibility, we use the opportunity to respect. Because actually, a Vaishnava is always looking for a reason to respect others. And although they understand, yes, bhakti is the ultimate thing, but let me at least respect wherever I can respect. And therefore, I think, it's not our job to judge whose bhakti is the best. It's our job to learn from other people's bhakti. And in a case where we have to judge someone's bhakti because we have to decide how we need to function and relate to them, say for example, someone says, how do I judge the bhakti of my prospective spiritual master? I need to understand what level of bhakti they have. But I think even in that situation, we're not really judging the level of the spiritual master's bhakti. Because who are we? We are a conditioned soul. We cannot see. But what we can judge is the amount of faith that I can put in this person. That's what we're judging. We're asking ourselves, how much of my heart can I put into following this person because of what I've learned of their bhakti? And therefore, I don't think we can judge someone else's bhakti. We can only judge ourselves.
So then, when do I decide whether I'm, in this case, I will forego varnashram because this person is more devotional, or I keep to varnashram?
Generally, what we're trying to do is honor varnashram and bhakti side by side. In most cases, we're trying to honor both side by side. And in a case, of course, every case may be different and, you know, every situation is complex. But yes, then in every situation, one may have to see what are the ramifications if I forego varnashram and dharma and just see this person from a bhakti perspective. What could be the ramifications? That every situation has to be judged individually, right? Like you can't make a blanket statement. But Vaishnavas are acting always to encourage, to empower, and to enthuse others in their devotion. That's the basic principle of Vaishnava behavior. And so in whichever situation we are, generally for a Vaishnava, the question which determines what decision they make in any situation is, how can I act in such a way as to empower, enthuse, elevate, and inspire someone else in their love for Krishna?
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for the wonderful lesson. In an article written by a spiritual master, it is said that the Grihastha ashram is the basis of all other ashrams. Could you explain why? And Queen Kunti, in her prayers, asked Lord Krishna to sever his bond of affection with her parents. And Srila Prabhupada explained that the bonds of love that bind Kunti to her family members are spiritual because they are oriented towards Krishna and is not material. Therefore, Kunti Devi is asking that body-based affection be eliminated. Could you give an example of a manifestation of spiritual affection in marriage? Sorry.
My specialist subject. Okay, so just on your first point, let's start with that. We'll warm up, psych myself up, crescendo. On your first point, why is the Grihastha ashram the basis of all ashrams? Because the Grihastha ashram is the ashram which is economically providing for society. The Grihastha ashram is like the stomach, it's generating all the energy, and on the basis of what the Grihasthas do, they earn, they create structure, they procreate the next generation, you know. So like this, the Grihastha ashram is basically the basis in that sense, because it's the activities of the Grihasthas are basically making the world go round in that sense. And then you talked about Kunti and how Kunti prays in the Bhagavatam, Sneha Pasham Imam Chindi Dridam Pandushu Vrishnishu. She says, please sever my tie of affection for my family members So sometimes the question comes as to how, why does she want to sever the ties of affection to her family members? They're all great devotees. They're all like intimately connected to Krishna. Surely it's a spiritual relationship. Why do you have to sever the affection? It's glorious to be attached to devotees. Kunti Maharani, in her deep humility, is seeing that although they're all devotees, because they're my children, because they're my family members, although they are great Vaishnavas, there's still a sense that when I look at them, I'll still see them as my family member. Understand? Like, your child could be the greatest devotee of Krishna, but there's still the chance that when you look at your child, you don't just see a great devotee of Krishna who's a soul just passing through this world, but you see my son or my daughter. There's still, because it's so deep-rooted, therefore it's called sneha pasham, a knot of affection. And therefore, even Kunti Maharani prays that, sever my tie of affection for my family members. They're all so dear to Krishna. But I don't know that I am seeing them spiritually. And therefore, towards the end of life, it's always recommended that gradually one give up material relationships. One may say, but if it's spiritual, why do you have to leave? Yes, it may be spiritual, but the danger is that we still see it because of our deep-rooted affection. There's still a tinge of material vision there. And that's why Kunti Maharani prays that, sever my tie of affection. And what makes the husband-wife relationship spiritual? It's what makes any relationship spiritual is three things. What is your vision of that person? What is the role that you play in that person's life? And what is the goal of your relationship? If you want to know whether any relationship you have is spiritual or material, just ask yourself these three questions. Number one, what's your vision of that person? Is it my husband or is it my wife? Or is it Krishna's servant who in this life has come to play this role so we can be together? There's a difference. What is the role that you play in that person's life? It's material if we're trying to get something from that person. But it's if our role is to serve that person, uplift that person, help that person to become the best they can in their service to Krishna, then it's spiritual. And what's the goal of your relationship? Why are you coming together? What is the success of your relationship? Is it to serve Krishna, to reach Krishna, to please Krishna? Is Krishna in the center of that relationship? Then it's spiritual. So any relationship like this, where the vision, the role, and the goal is Krishna-centered, then it's a spiritual relationship.
Thank you.
It's okay. Okay, maybe these last two.
What are the top three things? What are the top three things you would suggest to accelerate bhakti at the fastest? Like, be it treating everyone equally, going to temple, or reading books, or according to your experience, what are the top three things?
Okay, let's do a YouTube short. Namaruchi Vaishnav Seva, Bhagavat Shravan, Jivadoya. Okay, that's four. Let's go with those three. Our acharya is saying, number one, Namaruchi. Develop a taste for the holy name. It's the biggest priority. Everything else is going to change. What you're going to carry with you is your name, your taste for Nam. Nothing else is going to count at the end of the day. But then Vaishnav Seva, by serving the Vaishnavas, by humbling oneself before the Vaishnavas, by being trained, by being guided, by letting a Vaishnav into your life, and by then giving your heart to assist them in their service to Krishna, then great service is done. That brings you a lot of strength, a lot of mercy. And Jivadaya, go out, share, spread, help. The formula for the most boring life is the life which begins and ends with I, me and mine. If you want to know a formula for a boring life, it's the life which begins and ends with I, me and mine. So go out, reach out, be kind, share what we have. Jivadaya. So now we have a Chaitanya Charitamrita marathon coming up. Don't skip this ad. So yes, we have a great opportunity. So many people know Bhagavatam, so many people know Bhagavad Gita, but very, very few people know about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. See, you can see just from what we've discussed today, it's not just a book of theology, but it's a book of human love. It's a book of community. It's a book of how to connect in relationships. We're so impersonal, we're so hard-hearted, we have no idea how to do all of these things. Actually, we've become so socially awkward because of lifetimes of impersonalism in the material world. We have no idea how to exchange love with each other. And even within the Krishna consciousness movement, we struggle like anything. We struggle to live together. We struggle to get along. We struggle to genuinely appreciate each other and see the good, because the heart has just become padlocked with impersonalism. And how do we break that? How do we just become kind, magnanimous, loving Vaishnavas? It feels so far away. But this is why Chaitanya Charitamrita is so beautiful, because it softens the heart by reading, by trying to live it, by trying to create communities, by trying to interact with others based on what we learn here. It really creates a beautiful life. So please don't look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita and think, oh, this is very high, no one will understand. And no, let us still give the Chaitanya Charitamrita to many, many people. And like this, culture, communities of love. Otherwise, Krishna consciousness is very, very dry. Just like, how long are we going to just sit here? We can talk philosophy, we can talk about projects, we can talk about, you know, so many things, but there needs to be some genuine exchange of love. Otherwise, it's not what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and our acharyas wanted. So the CC is such a beautiful book because it helps us to remember. We're trying to orientate and move towards that community of love. So Jivadaya, go out, give these books, give these sets. Help the world. That will be very nice. Okay, last one.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for your talk. I think it's really beautiful that bhakti transcends the Varnashram system, and how you said that the love of someone's heart is what's most important. I think in our own lives, operating in, not even in a Varnashram system, but in like Western institutions, when is it appropriate for us to, one, like engage with the institution, two, like engage but refrain, and three, like not want to get involved at all, as in like know when to like put your foot down with institutions?
Yeah, institutions. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, a necessary evil. When I went to Vrindavan once, someone told me something nice about institutions. He said, institutions are like a flowing stream. And your spiritual life is like a boat. And if you ride that boat on the stream expertly, then that stream takes you towards your goal. But if you allow that stream of water to enter into the boat, then it will sink you. We live in an institution, we serve in an institution, we're loyal to this institution, but our institutional identities don't define us. We don't lose our sense of our relationship with Krishna whilst being in this institution. I very much like Vrindavan because in Vrindavan it almost feels like you also escape, dare I say it, some of the ISKCON world. Not that we have a problem with ISKCON, not that we don't like ISKCON, not that. But sometimes you also just need to be away from that world. You need to be away from all the titles, you need to be away from all the designations, and you need to just go and remember, I'm just a beggar. I just want to love Krishna. And all of these titles that people interact with me on the basis of, that's not me, it's a role, it's not who I am. So in an institution we function for the purpose of service, we function for the purpose of support, we function together for the purpose of nurturing each other's bhakti. But then we always remember that I'm not defined by the institution. I'm defined by my relationships with the Vaishnavas and my relationship with Krishna. And so I think that's just a very an individual thing of how each person will function within this institution, but then maintain their spiritual focus on the essence. So just learn how to navigate your boat on that stream and never allow the stream to enter and become like you define yourself by that, then you get sunk. It's a big topic, just some thoughts.